Hi, everyone. Wait, can you hear me? I'm Scotty, and I'm an alcoholic. It's really good to be here. I feel like I haven't spoken at a meeting in a while, so I'm really grateful for the opportunity. My sobriety date is August 23rd, 2011, so I have just over 5 years. I have a home group, and it's Togetherness in Action. It's a women's meeting in the West Village. I have a sponsor. I'm reworking the steps for the third time. I'm on step 4. Fun times. And I have sponsees. And I'm going to get into my story in a second, but I wanted to start by reading my favorite part of the big book. And it's on page 25. There is a solution. There is a solution. Almost none of us like the self-searching, the leveling of our pride, the confession of shortcomings which the process requires for its successful consummation. But we saw that it really worked in others, and we had come to believe in the in the hopelessness and futility of life as we had been living it. When therefore we were approached by those in whom the problem had been solved, there was nothing left for us but to pick up the simple kit of spiritual tools laid at our feet. We have found much of heaven. We have been rocketed into a fourth dimension of existence of which we had not even dreamed. The great fact is just this, and nothing less, that we had had a deep and effective spiritual experiences which have revolutionized our whole attitude towards life, toward our fellows, and towards God's universe. The central fact of our lives today is the absolute certainty that our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. He has commenced to accomplish those things for us which we could never do by ourselves. I love that passage because, I mean, over the years, I know that, through this work that I've done by working the steps and coming to meetings and doing service and connecting with a power greater than myself, I feel like I've truly been rocketed into a fourth dimension of existence. I mean, I just have a life today that is unrecognizable. I came into the rooms when I was 25, and it wasn't the first time I came into the rooms. I think I went to my first AA meeting when I was 17 or 18. I was told to come to this meeting when I was 16. So I was resentful. So I never came to this meeting. I just didn't even want to go there. I loved alcohol. I loved doing drugs, and I hated being alone with my thoughts. And the household that I grew up in, I grew up in Connecticut, and I grew up here. And the household that I grew up in, it was an alcoholic home, but neither of my parents drank. But there was a lot of that. They weren't in the program, so there was that tension, this dry alcoholism going on, and I never really knew what kind of reaction I was going to get from my mom. She was really angry and volatile, and my dad was just removed. And when I was really young, I was living in this very rural town in northwestern Connecticut, and there wasn't a whole lot to do. And because I didn't grow up with alcohol, I never saw, to be very clear, I never was really around alcohol. So I didn't know what healthy drinking even looked like. I just saw people that didn't drink, or then I kind of fantasized about these people that I saw in movies getting wasted. And so I didn't even fully understand what it meant to drink, but I knew that there was something there for me. And so as soon as I had the opportunity to drink, I took it, and I loved it. I mean, I don't remember my first drink. My parents had a liquor cabinet in their house, and I would take swigs of vodka when they weren't home, and I was left home alone all the time. But the first time I got really drunk was, It was the millennium. It was Y2K. It was, yeah. And everyone kind of, you know, my dad freaked out. We had all these cases of water in our house because he thought everything was going down. I don't know. It was funny. It was a funny time. And so we were at, I was at my parents' friend's very fancy party, and my friend Bunny, we were from Connecticut, so that's how we're named out there. Bunny gave me some vodka and orange juice, and I was like, yes, this is great. And I had a spiritual experience. Truly, I did. I mean, I was so angsty and dark. Like, I was like this very pretty little girl. My parents knew how to package me well, so I looked good, so everyone knew that we were okay. You know, like, outside appearances were very important. And so I knew how to look okay, but like I always felt like I just knew a little bit too much. My family was very dysfunctional. I have secret sisters that I didn't find out about until I was older. My dad was an ex-heroin addict. He comes from a crazy dysfunctional family, but no one was allowed to know about that. And so I just had to, you know, walk around with a headband and just pretend like everything was fine. And so that was a lot of pressure for me. I was angry. I was so angry. And so when I first took that drink, all that pressure just kind of like lifted. And it just kind of felt like I didn't need to think about it anymore. It wasn't my responsibility. I was off the hook. And so, which is a really great feeling. It was like a huge relief. And so I drank at every opportunity I could from then on. And so I ended up going to a boarding school in ninth grade. And my first couple of weeks there, I got a boyfriend. It was in Massachusetts. It was like this very, I don't know, cinematic situation. It was very strange. But I ended up getting very violently sexually assaulted by this guy that I had started dating. It was my first boyfriend. And it was so scary and horrible. And I didn't tell anyone. And I fell into this deep depression. But I was in this school in the middle of nowhere. I didn't have access to alcohol. So I started picking up like other compulsive behaviors. Like I ended up breaking up with him. So I started, you know, sleeping around with other boys. I started cutting myself. I got really depressed and I started developing like acute anxiety. And I was put on lots of medication. I was put on Adderall. My grades were like going down, and I was put on Xanax and Klonopin. I was like 14 years old. I mean, and when I finally told someone, nobody really did anything. I told my parents and they didn't really do anything. It was like too much of an inconvenience or something. It was my word against his, and it would have been this, you know, whole thing. And so I got this idea that I was just like alone in the world, and my safety and my needs didn't really matter. So I was like already a pissed off kid. Now I was like really angry, but still like wanted to look good on the outside. So you know, I started smoking pot, started doing other drugs. I ended up getting kicked out of this school for trespassing. I got kicked out of this school. And the boy that, you know, assaulted me got to stay. And so I was like in this furious rage, you know. I instantly put myself in this mindset of like, all right, I've gone through X, Y, and Z, and none of you know what it feels like. And I used that idea to really justify my behavior. And I came back to school in New York. I was living on the Upper East Side of my parents' apartment. My father was really sick. He had hepatitis C from intravenous drug use. And my mom started drinking again. It was just a nightmare. And so I didn't really have any, you know, parental supervision. I didn't have like a curfew or anything. And so everything just started to escalate. And that's really, you know, I had this moment of that I have arrived moment. You know, in Bill's story, he talks about, he's like, I have arrived. And he's like, with all these bankers, and he's golfing, and it's great. My I have arrived moment was like on the Upper West Side at a house party where everyone, you know, because I had more, I had access to alcohol. And during that time, it was very easy in New York City to buy booze. And I loved it. And there was like a very small window of probably, I don't know, 6 months when it kind of worked for me. I had started to black out at about 15 or 16, but it wasn't every time I drank. By the time I was 18, I was blacking out every single time that I drank. And I joked about it. I just said that I was like time traveling. And I just assumed that that's how everyone drank. I just didn't know any better. I thought everyone drank to get drunk. And I drank at people. I drank at myself. I would get myself in pretty awful situations. And I'd kind of turn the story around to make it funny. And it wasn't very funny. It got really depressing very quickly. And so I was drinking and taking all this medication and then abusing cocaine. It was pretty rough. And, you know, I had my real first moment of surrender, I think, when I was 19. I was 19 years old. I was living with a 31-year-old Colombian drug dealer. My parents were paying for the apartment. And I couldn't stop using and I couldn't stop drinking. And every day I would say, I'm not going to do it again. I'm not going to do it again. I would hide the drugs in my apartment. I would like tape them behind the mirror in the bathroom, tape them on. Like it was so strange, as if I wouldn't, you know, remember where they were, but sometimes I wouldn't. It was very unmanageable. I couldn't show up for my life. I was just constantly high. And all my other friends were off in college, like living their lives, having this normal experience. And I was in New York going to NYU part-time, barely. And I just knew that I had to stop. So, but I couldn't. And I, you know, I ended up getting institutionalized twice. I went to a dual diagnosis psych hospital two times. Once, because in a blackout, I sliced up my wrists. I woke up, I had no memory of it. Very scary. And the second time was because I got sexually assaulted again. And I have no recollection of either thing happening. You know, it was like the next day, like one, woke up in a pool of blood. Two, like woke up in a lot of pain with a used condom next to my pillow. You know, it was really dark, really dark. Really experienced incomprehensible demoralization. And it just kind of continued to get worse. You know, I had periods of time, like I came into the rooms of AA when I was probably 20 or 21, counted days up until 30. I was still smoking pot, whatever. But I heard the message. And it wasn't a matter of if I was going to get sober. It was a matter of how long could I stretch it out. Like, I knew that I was going to end up here. Like, thank God I had some exposure to AA. My father had been in rehab 4 times. My mom had been in rehab 2x. My sister's been in rehab 5 times. I'm like the miracle child. I went to only one 28-day program. So it's just a matter of time. I was just, how much time do I have?
11 minutes.
Okay, great. You know, it's just like a matter of time. So when I was 25, I went to a music festival in Tennessee. I met a guy there. We fell in love. We were on ecstasy. So I moved with him to California a week later. And it didn't work out. And I found myself in a cabin in this, like, small town in Napa Valley. Totally alone. I had my little dog there. I had a blow-up mattress. I didn't even have a car. Like, I had no way to get around. And the alcohol and the drugs stopped working. I couldn't get drunk anymore. I couldn't get high anymore. So, like, what, how devastating is that? Like, what am I going to do now? Like, nothing. Like, my life is over. You know, like I said, all these bad things happened. I suffered a lot of consequences. But it is a miracle that I didn't get arrested ever. But what ended up happening, I crashed a girl that I met in California. I backed her truck into a parked car. Again, didn't remember it. And the next morning, I discovered that I had done this, and I got, you know, that really scared me. And I had this window of grace, you know, that they talk about. I don't know. I hear people talking about it in the rooms. Where I just realized that I was done. I was just done. Like, I had extended everything. I was just finished. And I ended up going to treatment, and the whole time I was in treatment, I would vacillate between, I'm not an alcoholic, I'm a drug addict, or, well, that was what I really stuck to. Because I had to go through this really long withdrawal process from the benzodiazepines I'd been taking for 11 years. And so I wasn't planning on staying sober. And somebody told me that I was having some kind of freak out. Someone was telling me to do something I didn't want to do. I don't like doing things that I don't want to do. And somebody just said, hey, Scotty, why don't you just take the suggestion? And I just was able to hear that. And so I took the suggestions. I tried that. And I went to a sober living place. I got a sponsor right away, and I started working the steps almost immediately. And my life started to change, you know? And, like, I didn't want to live in a halfway house. I was with, like, 17-year-old girls that were shooting heroin in the middle of the night. Like, I didn't like that. It wasn't comfortable for me. But it worked. I learned how to be sober there. I went to 90 meetings in 90 days. I started meditating, or pretending to meditate, which, by the way, is like a good tip. I said, I don't know how to meditate. I hate sitting alone with my own thoughts. That's why I drank. They said, just pretend. And it worked. And, you know, I've gone through a lot in sobriety, and a lot of things that I never thought that I'd be able to deal with. I'm talking about, like, little things. Like, while I was still drinking, I pretended to graduate from college. Like, I walked across the stage, pretended to graduate from college. Like, did not have a degree. I managed to go back to college and get the degree and do it with integrity. And, like, who knew that showing up to class, not high, and doing what's asked of you and being nice to your professor, you get good grades. I don't know. What a concept. I was able to do that. I got jobs. I've lost jobs. I put my mom in treatment. She now has almost 5 years of sobriety, and that was horrible. My father left our family for my secret sister's mother, which is a whole other can of worms, which was just beyond devastating for me, and I didn't drink. I still don't drink. And every time I talk to him, or every time I don't get a call on my birthday or something like that, you know, it's like getting stabbed in the heart, but I don't drink. Instead, what I've learned to do and through the steps is to, like, pray for him and to pray that he gets everything that he wants or everything that he needs or everything that I want, which, like, that's not the old me. The old me would just, like, you know, I'd be mad at you and I just would try to kill myself. Like, it makes no sense. So, like, you know, I've gotten in relationships in sobriety. I have real, true friendships. I experienced intimacy. I got married 6 weeks ago. Yeah, like, that's crazy. I cheated on every single boyfriend I've ever had up until I got sober. I thought that it was fully because I didn't trust anyone, you know? So, like, if I can't trust anyone, then what's the point? You know, everything sucks. Like, I've learned that that's not true. That's just, like, one of the lies that I have told myself. And I don't know. It's, like, this work with, like, connecting to the universe or God or the higher power, whatever you want to call it. It's, like, I can show up for myself and other people in a way that was just not possible before. I just couldn't do it. Now I'm, like, a wife. I just found out that I'm pregnant on my honeymoon. Yeah. crazy. You know, I have a lot of fear around that, obviously. I wasn't fully expecting it, but, you know, it's great. And, am I done?
5 minutes.
5 minutes. Okay, cool. So I'm in, like, lots of fear because I'm bringing a human life into this world. And, like, I come from dysfunction. So, you know, so it's like doing the tools that we're given through this program really help with that kind of thing. You know, because when I'm in fear and I'm not trusting in God, then what I like to do is just start to, like, control everything and everyone around me, and I'm really nasty to be around. And it's just like, I know that today I have a choice, that I can either pick up the tools, trust God, like, turn it over, and then just, like, go with it, or I can just be, like, ugh, like, tight and angry. Because ultimately things are going to happen in this life, whether I plan it or not. And it's just pretty cool. It's pretty interesting. I mean, when I came into these rooms, I did not know how to, like, identify as a human. I just kind of thought I was this object hurling through space. Like, I just really, I was very lost. It took me a really long time to make friends in recovery. I didn't do it, actually, for like 2.5 years. I only hung out with people that I still partied with because, like, the stakes were a little lower. You know, it wasn't like a real intimate relationship. And then, you know, it was, like, less scary to me. And I've learned how to let go of all of that, which is just such a huge gift. I'm just going to say that, like, I'm just so tremendously grateful to the program. I've really grown up here. And for anyone that's here that is, like, this is their first couple of meetings and you didn't relate or identify with anything that I said, there are plenty of other meetings. I'm not the president of AA. When I first came in, I thought that the speakers were, like, the president of AA and that they were the boss. Like, I'm not the boss. I'm not the authority. But please go, you know, if you didn't like anything that I said, please go to another meeting and find somebody else, because there are people here that have your story. You're not alone. And I know that I really felt that way. And I don't anymore. Like, I really, truly, honestly don't feel alone anymore. And that is such a gift. So I'll just end there. So thank you very much.